That ends number nine. We'll go to number 10. Kyle, as always,
I remember we switched them. So it's got to be migratory game, bird season's first, then it's waterfowl.
Oh, okay. I noted that. Okay. Well, we're going to do 11 before 10 then.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter and commissioners. Yeah, we asked to swap just because I think this will help with efficiency and help some of the logic chain of the next one if I start with this one first. So if you're okay with that, I think that will help everything.
Totally, totally.
Okay. Okay, I think it's coming through, if you can verify that. So, thank you. I'm Kyle Spragans. I am your waterfowl section manager in the wildlife program. The first WAC that will be covered here under this presentation is related to the overall migratory game bird seasons and regulations covered in WAC 220-416-060. Migratory game birds are inclusive of ducks, geese, coot and snipe, mourning dove, and band-tailed pigeon. This is all wrapped into this seasons and regulations. Because of their ties to federal authorities. The Migratory Game Bird Hunting Authorities and Process is a long, year-long process that at this point we're trying to sync both the federal frameworks that set the outer bounds of things like season lengths, the earliest opening date, the latest closing date, and the upper bag limits of certain species. And then in this process, trying to fit WAC state discretion within those federal framework outer bounds. Things like the actual season timing within those outside framework dates and the bag limits can be more restrictive, but not more liberal than what federal framework allows. So where we are in this process is in the briefing meeting here as we head into the adoption meeting. And by the end of April, I must turn around season selection dates due to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for publication in the Federal Register. When we talk about the migratory birds, there's a little bit of difference in how we think about this. So I've broken it up to allow sort of that the logic behind each a little more clearly. I'll start with duck populations and the status information that we use to develop the season proposals. Largely, this is for ducks. The information that we rely upon comes from vast aerial surveys. Both in the map that you're seeing down in the lower right of these North America-wide breeding area aerial surveys that have run for 65 years now, as well as transects that we then operate here in Washington to get a better sense of what we are producing in our waterfowl habitats in Washington. Unfortunately, the 2020 surveys were restricted because of COVID issues. Entry into Canada in remote areas of Alaska was not allowed. To counter that, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had used predictive models based off of that 65-year data set to generate the proposals that relate to the overall season structure and the bag limit allowances for ducks. The most recent data that we have is the 2019 breeding survey data, which was very similar to the year before. But as I pointed out last year, all 10 principal ducks, which primarily means the dabbling and the diving ducks, have come down off of 2015 peaks. And as you can see in the graphic on the lower right, the total duck population that is monitored and picked up during these breeding surveys is largely driven by mallard, not exclusively, but certainly those peaks and valleys are highly associated with mallard populations because of their broad distribution throughout North America. While mallards have a very broad distribution and certainly feed into harvest, there are certain species that they do not track well for. These problematic species include things like northern pintail, where the most recent estimate was the ninth lowest on record in that 65-year span. And things like scop, the aggregate of greater and lesser scop, was the fifth lowest in that 65-year span. There are national strategies that inform these harvest options for things like northern pintail and scop, which as of the most recent proposal is status quo as compared to last season, but still remains in these restrictive national harvest strategy that are prescribed for us, which result in a one bird daily bag limit for pintail and a two bird daily bag limit and a shortened 86-day season length for scat. Again, that is status quo compared to the most recent season that we just experienced. I want to take a second, though, to focus on the mallard piece of this. In Washington, we are part of the Pacific Flyway, the orange pieces of that map in the lower right. And together, between Alaska, BC, Washington, Oregon, and California, what is known as the Western Mallard Model, or the Western Mallard Harvest Strategy, that is from the Adaptive Harvest Management Toolbox. This looks at breeding populations in the north against breeding areas in the south, and it looks at the overall status to develop that outer framework shape, the total number of days, the total number of ducks that may be allowed. What I would like to specify is that Adaptive Harvest Management's ultimate goal is to stabilize harvest regulations in that sort of overall framework. So for the last 25 years, we have been in a liberal regulation package of 107 days, the full amount allowed by federal law and the federal frameworks, with a total duck bag limit of 7, of which 7 may be mallards and 2 may be hen mallard within that. As you can see in the values that are stated, while Washington has remained fairly stable in what we pick up in our breeding index, other areas that contribute into the mallard population that is in the Pacific Flyway have not been stable. They are on declines, as I mentioned, in that sort of overall picture. The reason that's important to realize is that when we talk about mallards and you look at different states and sort of trying to put our state against others, it is important to understand that this Western Mallard AHM model, what that structure is trying to achieve. As I mentioned, it's trying to achieve stability. What often gets misinterpreted is that 107 days and a 7-day bag limit is often interpreted as we are anticipating all hunters to participate at that level. And that, in fact, is not the case. What Adaptive Harvest Management looks at is trying to hit an overall average of adult male mallard harvest rate. The way that we measure harvest rate is through banding and through annual operations of banding mallards at the beginning of the season that we, WDFW staff, as well as partners such as the Yakima Nation and the Stillaguamish Tribe help to conduct every year, are able to put out a sample of bands to look at where does Washington stack up against that harvest rate estimate. If we were to follow that harvest rate estimate, what it tries to balance out is that adult male mallard harvest rate would be 0.134. So 13 out of every 100 adult male mallards that would be out there. When we look at how states actually fall out with that, Washington, which follows this Pacific Flyway structure, it harvests on average between 45 to 51% mallard. When you look at our adult male harvest rate, it is far above that sort of targeted average. And when you look at something like adult females, which are what are actually contributing to our breeding population, our value versus what would be expected, the 0.071, is far higher than that expectation. When you look at two other high mallard harvest states for comparison, such as California, which is here in the Pacific Flyway and ranks third nationally in total mallard harvest, Washington ranks second and has 4 out of the last 5 years. California is 15% composition of mallard in their harvest and is actually below the estimated harvest rates that would be anticipated by this Western mallard model. An extreme would be Arkansas, which is number one, but falls within the Mississippi Flyway in a structure that is completely different in terms of the number of days allowed and those bag limits. Mallard composition is high in Arkansas, but Arkansas is not a breeding contribution state. It is a wintering area that is harvesting birds that are coming from other sources. We, Washington, exceed all of those. And that is something important to realize when we look at how are our bag limit structures generating total harvests every year. With all that, those outer structures and the outer framework and our information based on breeding populations, there is no change from the previous year's, previous waterfowl season's duck season proposals. The total number of days is 107, of which we take two out to afford the opportunity for youth hunts in the west side of the state. That's September 25th, and then again in February 5th. And then on the east side of the state, it's October 2nd and February 5th. Most recently, the second year, we have afforded a veteran and active military hunt that occurs on that same Saturday, February 5th date, so that it is actually a youth, veteran, and active military date that has been met with warm reception. And thankfully, public land opportunities on federal national wildlife refuges have been very helpful in capturing and facilitating that opportunity. And what is left over is the 105 days that we put towards the general season, which we prioritize opening and closing on a weekend. But what is very important to mention is that duck seasons may not extend beyond January 31st, except for that special hunt opportunity. That is in federal law, that is an international treaty, and that is something that is one of those hard framework changes that we don't have authority to move. In that bag limit structure, seven may be total ducks. The only sub restrictions underneath that are the two hen mallard and the one pintail, as well as the diving duck restrictions of two redhead, two canvasback, two Scott. Those are all federal framework, national strategy driven. Those are not things that we can manipulate other than to be more restrictive. The only thing that we place because of state discretion is related to sea ducks. And in Western Washington, we have sub limits of two scoter in aggregate, two golden eye in aggregate, two long tail duck, and a one harlequin duck season limit. I did want to take a second to talk about that sea duck status just real briefly. Sea ducks are not able to be monitored the same way on the breeding grounds as dabbling ducks, that big national map of aerial surveys. And so for many years now, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has conducted open water winter surveys of the Puget Sound, or I should say Washington's waters of the Salish Sea, the map in the upper right. This is an intensive effort by staff every year to conduct these types of surveys. And what we're trying to get at is to balance this, what do we know is here in availability during the winter time, because we don't have that inference from the breeding grounds. And monitor harvest, monitor allowable take based off of that information. With that, an overall strategy is set from scoters, which are by far the most abundant sea duck species out in the Salish Sea waters. And based on the most recent information, we are in this restrictive package under our harvest strategy that puts an overall daily bag limit of two. This is an example of something that we are gearing up to revisit during the game management plan cycle. We do have reason to be concerned over something like harlequin duck, where we are not below the threshold that triggers our action, but there are certainly changes out on the landscape, such as increases in hunter authorizations that have happened not only as a COVID year bump, but there have been some trends before that certainly make us wonder about sort of the balance of harvest rates in a species where we have to monitor at a much closer level. Switching to goose populations, operate a bit differently because of the nature of the distribution of goose populations.
Before you move on to the goose, The scoters and the golden eyes are all species?
Scoter, yeah, good question. Scoter is an aggregate. We actually have three species of scoter, largely dominated by surf scoter, but it is very difficult to pick that out on the wing as a hunter. And so we aggregate it to be more conservative in what we're actually allowing to occur. As I mentioned, surf scoter is very abundant. Something like black scoter is not very abundant out there. Goldeneye is the same. There are two species, Barrow's goldeneye and common goldeneye. Again, very difficult, except for the males, to tell from the wing. And then long-tailed duck and harlequin duck are explicit species. So there are seven species that we actually require a mandatory harvest report for harvest in this zone of Western Washington. I will mention that these species that I'm pointing at are listed as SGCN. This is why we take the added state discretion of restricting harvest at an appropriate weight where the rate where it is not detrimental to the population, but still affords the opportunity of harvest. That I'm having a hard time seeing who, if there's other questions, Larry. Okay, I'm going to proceed.
There's no other hands up. Hold on a minute. That just changed. Commissioner Coons just raised his hands. Unmute yourself, Fred.
Thank you. Sorry, don't want to take too much time, but a quick question. I'm just curious, why did you use the 2007 and 2009 time period to show your average plus or minus for the sea ducks? Because of the current ocean conditions have changed so much since 2009.
Correct. So I should be a little more explicit. So in 2010, there was a draft harvest strategy that was presented to the commission that have set the sort of the thresholds that we look at as it pertains to the state discretion statement on sea duck harvest. The table that you're seeing is the sort of overall bounds on that, like I said, driven by scoters. The 2007 to 2009 average was what was targeted as sort of the benchmark to, of comparison in that harvest strategy. Was more or less related to is a low dip in the time series. And so it is sort of a worst known, but that is in terms of the population. And as I mentioned, we're seeing some changes in sort of hunter dynamics. And so that's why we're looking to reevaluate that during the game management plan cycle.
Okay.
For goose populations, as I mentioned, this operates a bit differently. Every goose, while we have six species of geese, those geese are operated at 14 populations because of their origins in the breeding grounds and their sort of terminus origin during the winter. This plays out differently in different parts of the state. And so one tool that is in our toolbox is to create goose management areas that have to be filed as part of federal framework to justify sort of targeted management based on certain concerns or certain considerations of goose populations that wind up in various parts of the state. Washington only has one breeding goose, the Western Canada goose, and the rest of them are all migrants from areas of Canada, Alaska, and Russia on their way to areas either here in Washington or beyond as far away as Mexico. So trying to sort of overlay these management plans, flyway management plans, to how that plays out in the state is a big part of the monitoring that we conduct. As I mentioned, we only have one breeder here in state that has a population objective based on the pairs, which we have been far, far above, and that is the Western Canada goose. In contrast, there are other white-cheeked geese, Canada and cackling geese, that are of various statuses. For example, Minima, the cackling goose, the smallest of the geese that we see, has a population objective set by management plan of 250,000. We use current three-year averages to base against that overall population objective. And in the case of something like cackling geese, the Minima, they are 6% below that population objective. Dusky Canada geese has a population objective of 20,000. The current three-year puts it at 28% below that. These two species combined are what influences our considerations around goose management area two, the southwest five counties of Washington. And in this case, both of them are not in statuses that are rapidly growing. In contrast to the other goose types like snow geese, where the population objective of the snow geese that we get from Wrangell Island, Russia, is 120,000, and the current three-year average is 477,000, or almost 300% above the population objective. Similarly, greater white-fronted geese in the most right-handed part of your frame, the population objective set by flyway management plan is 300,000. The current three-year is 622,000. Or 108% above population objective. In these cases, trying to consider what is going on out there, Canada cackling geese do not show any reason to adjust. White-fronted geese, the bag limit is set at 10, which is the federal framework quota. We cannot go any higher than that. They are far above objective, and while they do not winter in the state, most, if not all, pass through the state at some time during the year on their way to California and Mexico. The most recent changes have been in the snow geese, and we have taken several strides towards trying to address snow goose harvest. In fact, the biggest one was 4 years ago when we actually segregated out these bag limits of the different geese instead of having an aggregate goose limit. The proposal, the primary proposal, is related to the snow geese, where we're asking to raise the overall statewide bag limit to 10. And during white goose only season segments, which I'll describe on the next slide, we would actually up the bag limit to the flyweight quota of 20. Goose season goose management areas, as I mentioned, are catered towards trying to target certain topics, certain goose issues that play out differently in the state. For goose management area 1 in the northwest corner and 4, which is the Columbia Basin, the topic has very highly skewed towards snow geese. As I mentioned, continued increases in from Wrangell Island Russia snow geese, where the overall spring population objective is 120,000. During the winter time now, in goose management area 1, we see 133,000 snow geese, and in goose management area 4, 153,690 snow geese. In goose management area 1, there is a management objective threshold that is set to trigger whether or not we become more liberalized in harvest, and we are above that trigger. And in goose management area 4, there has never been a management objective because as of 10 years ago, snow geese wouldn't have been identified as a wintering component of the Columbia Basin. Obviously, with a count of 153,000, that has changed dramatically in less than 10 years. We're already maxed out at the 107 total days allowed. With goose seasons, we are allowed to structure those a little bit differently. We can break them up into 3 segments, and we can work out to March 10th, which is the ultimate, the last date allowed under federal framework and federal law. And so it's a matter of seeing if there are opportunities to place dates where the harvest potential is higher. Outside of that 107 days, the only ability to target these populations would be in something like an agricultural depredation permit, which is a non-consumptive take. This is why we tend to utilize harvest seasons as our tool towards some of these management objectives that are placed in flyway management plan, because harvest is consumptive and depredation permits are not. As of yesterday, we have the second live agricultural depredation permit towards snow geese because of the current status of snow geese in the state. Point being is that we try to utilize the tools that we have available, and the reality is there's only a few tools left, and that is what this proposal, the proposals here in front of you are targeted to try and address. The proposals include a modification of the boundary to goose management area 1 to include areas where February dates, February season dates, would actually be effective at implementing higher harvest. So the maps that you see on the left are the current is what you see in the orange, where goose management area 1 includes Skagit, all of Snohomish County, and Island County. The proposal is to remove Island County and the portion of Snohomish County east of I-5 out of goose management area 1 to be absorbed in goose management area 3, which does not put any dates past January 31st. Additionally, this would add Whatcom County. So the blue that you're seeing would be the new version of goose management area 1. And again, this is to align with where we see flocks and where we believe the February dates have the most potential to actually be effective harvest. As I mentioned, the proposal is to increase the white goose bag limit statewide to 10. But in those two cases, in goose management area 1 and goose management area 4, where we have days that are solely for white goose only hunting. That's 11 days in Goose Management Area 1 and 19 days in Goose Management Area 4. We're proposing to increase the white goose bag limit to 20 daily during those periods only, those season segments, those late season segments only. I see a hand.
Mr. Smith, you have a question? You need to unmute yourself, please.
I have some comments, but, you know, could wait to the end of Kyle's presentation. Are we getting there, Kyle?
Yeah, we're very close.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, real quick. The last couple are related to Brant. Brant is guided by an overall Pacific Flyway winter survey that is conducted from Eisenbeck, Alaska, all the way down to Mexico and major eelgrass wintering bays. Along the way, it's a huge collaborative effort to try and pull off. But that overall flyway number generates that outer framework, the total days and the bag limit structure. And then we in Washington try to fit that based on when we have birds in our bays and how that changes in the four counties that have allowable season. Season dates are in January. Nothing new there. The Clallam County has 3 days, Whatcom County, the same 3 days. Skagit County has somewhere between 0 and 8 days, which is determined on an in-season aerial survey to assess the current winter count in Skagit County. And then Pacific County out on the coast has a 14-day season, which starts a little bit earlier. And that is largely because that is a black brant dominated zone. We actually have two brant, black brant, which is the species, and then Western High Arctics, which is this, which hunters refer to as gray bellies, which is a segment that comes from the Canadian Arctic. And in Skagit County in particular, that is why there is higher management consideration around the harvest that we allow in that county. Additionally, the youth, veteran, and active military date on the Saturday, February 5th is brant are an allowable species in all four of those counties. Real quick, I mentioned that there are other migratory birds, coot and snipe both follow waterfowl seasons. There is no change compared to previous years or that 25 year span of stabilized regulations. I just wanted to call them out separately. Mourning dove is based off of harvest rate information that comes from extensive banding that, again, we with other Pacific Flyway collaborators conduct every summer. Season dates are set from September 1st, which is the earliest date under federal framework because of federal law and international treaties. It runs until October 30th, and that bag limit is not any different than than previous season or bag limit structures. Finally, band-tailed pigeon. There is a harvest strategy that is set for band-tailed pigeon, which includes that is derived from mineral site surveys that we conduct every year here in Washington, as well as collaborators in British Columbia, Oregon, and California. Band-tailed pigeon seasons were closed in Washington from 1991 to 2001 until that survey methodology was dialed in and finalized. Since that time, we have been in what is prescribed as a restrictive regulatory alternative, tracked by that index that we from those surveys that we conduct. And this is stated in the Pacific Flyway Management Plan and is a prescribed date bag limit structure that comes out of it. Finally, the last one is related to falconry. Just as a mention, falconry, as it pertains to migratory game birds, in those federal frameworks, the 107-day limit is set to any one species in any geographically defined area. That's why the goose zones exist. That also pertains to falconry. So falconry seasons overlap seasons that are open for those species. There are a couple of extended falconry dates, and that aligns with the youth opportunity and the youth veteran active military opportunity at the end of the season in both sides of Washington. And finally, a small extended season that exists for mourning doves specifically. And again, this is only pertaining to falconry harvest. There were public comments received, 1,281 total responses, 58% agreed, 5% disagreed, 37 neutral. Of 34 written comments, the common themes were around northern pintail and scop lower bag limits, the not liking those. Also, comments related to goose management areas and their purpose and the season timing. There was a lot of questions around goose management area two. As I mentioned, cackling geese and dusky geese are not favorable population statuses right now. And so there was no proposed change down there. Season dates and the federal framework confusion, the sort of in between of that, the outer bounds and what we can do within that, that we can't be more liberal, we can be more restrictive, but that we try to fit both duck and goose considerations appropriately. And finally, concerns over sea duck management and increased numbers of hunters. We are monitoring the mandatory harvest report cards that we get. And as I mentioned, there is a lot of effort starting to gear up towards evaluation during this game management plan cycle. And that's what I got.
Thank you, Kyle. Commissioner Smith, do you want to speak now, or could we let Kyle get through his last segment, which is agenda item 10, and then in the spirit of moving through our agenda, what's your pleasure?
Well, what is his next agenda item?
Waterfowl equipment and regulations, briefing and public hearing.
Well, I'd like to just speak now and be quick. There's a lot more I could say about this, but you know, I grew up in a hunting family, ate a lot of duck growing up, and, you know, my dad had come home with, you know, a brace of ducks, and he'd plunk maybe 3 to 4 ducks in the sink and tell my mom to pluck the ducks, and we'd eat that meat for some period of time. These limits, you know, a 20 per day bag limit, I mean, does anybody ever really do that? And if they did, let's say all of a sudden, I don't know, there's more effective firearms or whatever, and everybody's getting their 20 a day bag limit in for snow geese. That would change all these numbers, right? So it's, to me, it's like they're fake numbers. am I being clear? How many people actually get 20 snow geese a day, and who could possibly consume 20 snow geese, you know, hunted a day, even if they froze them for the year?
I think I will touch on that in my next segment a little bit more clearly, which is why I swapped things. But to your point, I don't know in Washington at the moment, because right now we're at 6 for white geese. What I can say is in the harvest report cards that we require in goose management area one, and I probably wasn't explicit about that, the difference between goose management area one and four is that we actually mandate a harvest report up there because of us trying to track total harvest versus what we see in the wintertime surveys that we conduct. Based on the 6, it's a pretty significant proportion that are hitting 6 right now. And so the overall increase to 10 during the general regular seasons outside of just those white goose only segments, it has been effective. Now, in the sort of bigger picture, based on the flyway management plans and the thresholds that are set in there, when we back off, that's when we would be considering changes in the bag limit structure. Most of the other Pacific flyway states are at quota, are at 20. Somewhere between 15 and 20. So we are actually on the lower end of what is currently allowed in the Pacific Flyway.
Lorna, you grew up in a hunting family. Your father has hunted. I've done a lot of waterfowl hunting for a lot of years, and you're very much dependent on a number of things, weather, conditions, wind, and proximity to whatever field the ducks, the geese want to be in, because most of it, at least up in Skagit, is field hunting. There is some out in the bay, I think. And Kyle, did you touch on what's taken place in the springtime back in the Dakotas on the northern migrating spring birds to try and protect the breeding habitat?
Again, I think I'll touch on that on the next one, probably a little more appropriately.
Okay. real quick, Commissioner McIsaac sent me some comments on an email, on a text a little bit ago, and I think what he's proposing makes sense, so I'll pass it to him real quick before we go to number 10, if I may, Kyle. Commissioner McIsaac?
Sure.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we've been wrestling with how to spend our time here because we have agenda item 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16 scheduled for the rest of today. I know Commissioner Baker said, I think she said she was not in favor of going till 7 o'clock tonight. We used to wrestle with this at the Pacific Council meetings frequently, and it always seemed to come back that going late into the evening was not very productive and ended up backfiring in terms of having meaningful staff presentations and commissioner intake of those. So it seems to me maybe we ought to just face facts that we have a two-day meeting here and not a day-and-a-half meeting. And to go to a reasonable break point tonight that's naturally comes at the end of one of these agenda items, maybe at 5:30, and start tomorrow at 8 o'clock with open public comment as advertised, and then pick up the balance of the wildlife business, and then have our discussion about the aggregate of all these wildlife things with regard to three-year or five-year or emerging science. I know Commissioner Thorburn's got some grouse things. And that does mean that the afternoon would go differently, or the rest of the day would go differently. In the afternoon, we might go till 4 o'clock or so. Our executive session would have to be delayed until we get to it. But it's a matter of just kind of facing facts. If it was a baseball game and you had a rain out for part of the middle innings, you have to just deal with that. And I think that it might be good to think about a plan that does not end up us going into the evening and face facts that we've got a two-day meeting on our hands right now on how to manage it.
A couple things I would add to that, and thank you for that, Commissioner McIsaac. I'm going to ask Brock Haynes, he's got three items on here a little bit later down the sheet, to do his best to help us get back on course. But before we go any farther, we do have one person yet standing by for public comment. And while before we go to her, Anish, you had some comment you wanted to make?
Just a quick maybe recommendation. If we do decide to split it, I guess just to, so the least amount of staff are having to come back tomorrow, if we could get to the landowner hunting program before we cut it off, that way only Brock would have to come back tomorrow if that's amenable. If not, we can make folks come back tomorrow if needed.
We're going to do our best. So let's go to the public comment, and then I'm going to ask for good presentations, but with some vigor throughout the rest of the day here.
All right, we'll now take public comment from registered attendees. The one registered attendee I have is Martha Hall, and she's also registered for the next item as well, and the only person. Go ahead, Martha. You've been unmuted.
Yes. This is very close at home. I can hear the shooting from my house in the Skagit Valley during the hunting season that we're talking about now on geese and waterfowl. I have three concerns. One is about sea ducks. I was involved in some monitoring of sea duck populations in North Puget Sound. There is a huge concern about how well they're doing. And to have any hunting of them when the concerns are so great just shocks me. Why can't these people shoot the extra snow geese instead of having to kill their harlequin and the other sea ducks? There's a big concerns about ocean conditions that are really fluctuating that are harming these sea ducks, and also the lack of forage fish. Herring, other species used to be plentiful in North Puget Sound. They no longer are. These things fluctuate and are out of our control. So why must anyone have to hunt something that we know is in trouble and we don't really even understand? Second, the longer season on geese, on white geese, might sound great as a solution, but it impacts are felt in two ways. Running a goose hunting season into March really affects those of us who use the Skagit Valley for bird watching. We have some of the best bird watching in the state during the time of migration of waterfowl. We have the raptors that are also here to watch. I went bird watching in March, early March this year, and I ran into snow geese hunters. I was shocked that it was still going on. I put on my calendar the last week in January, and I can go enjoy the Skagit Flats near my home because hunting's over. Well, that day is long gone. When I was bird watching, there were many other bird watchers. We were very upset to find out that there was snow geese hunting in March. Also, we had trumpeter swans in the same areas. And as the shooting was going on, the trumpeter swans were going here and there and were really skitsy. And anytime anyone opened a car door, everything flew away. And this is before these birds have to make a long migration. I think there must be another way to kill more snow geese than to make the season longer and impact not only bird watchers and other users of the Skagit Valley, but also the other birds that are living with the snow geese that are being shot. So I wish staff would consider this and look at another way to kill more snow geese if that's the goal.
Thank you for your comments, Martha. Okay, that will wrap up number 11.